Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Tuesday, October 24th. I'm Alan Shartok. On today's program, the Copyright Forum, joining me in the studio today are Paul Rapp and Bill Westwood and maybe Polly Law. They're here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art, and your poetry if you went to a public college, your private college, or poetry if you went to a public college. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Other ways to get in touch with us electronically, we'll go into that after the break. Paul, Bill, maybe Polly, and much more all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok, making a rare appearance. On today's show is the Copyright Forum. To answer your questions, we have our usual great panel in the studio. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues, wrote a column for the Metroland, and used to play in a band. You still play in a band?
I still do. I play in a new band.
What's the name of the band?
The Eddingtons.
Oh, the Eddingtons. We'll ask about that later, perhaps. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators. I would change whoever wrote this to the leading medical illustrator in the country. Professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Someday, certain museums are going to take my advice and do a full show for Bill Westwood. Polly Law is past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She's a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and who is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown in Nantucket, Massachusetts. Bill, Paul, and Polly, welcome back to the Vox Pop.
Hey,
Alan.
Thank you.
give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Certainly somebody out there knows that somebody has done them a wrong. Yeah. Somebody has done them a tort, and has taken something that they wrote and sent into a major magazine in New York. And then seen it there in the paper. Certainly you want to complain about that, right, Paul?
Taking a piece of their soul, yes.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. I think everybody's out battening down the hatches.
Reminds me a little bit of the fisherman.
Yeah.
Takes a piece of their soul.
We've exceeded our sell-by date.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, dear.
But.
Okay, so it's 1-800-348-2551. By the end of this show, we won't be able to keep up. But, you know, people get a little timid. It's like going to the dance and standing on the other side of the room.
Don't make the first move.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And then, of course, there's the possibility the phones aren't working. Has that ever happened at WAMC? No. 1-800-348-2551. We do have a cracked engineering staff here at...
Did you say crack or cracked?
No, so you put your hand over your mouth like my mom used to do. See, what do you guys... Okay, so anyway, cracked. So anyway, 1-800-348-2551. Each of you can say something now since the phones aren't ringing and since the engineers are on their way down to check that the phones are ringing.
Well, people can get us by email, too, can't they?
They can. They can send
or
an email.
Or through Facebook.
Yeah, that's all true. Okay.
Well, I can tell you that copyright infringements are alive and well.
Are they?
I've just discovered another 8 infringements of my own work.
Really?
Yeah, really.
And how did you discover them, Bill Westwood?
You just start Googling. You pick a couple of images that you know prone to being infringed, and you put them in Google search
as an image,
mm-hmm. and lo and behold, they start populating your screen.
And do they automatically find? I mean, I just looked up my twin brother Lewis's picture on the Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So right, you got that? So I looked him up, and there are all his pictures of my twin brother, and the next column is all pictures of me. So I'm wondering whether or not they have some kind of thing where if Lewis Shartok has a picture of him, they match it up automatically like your fingerprint does, with all the others because we look pretty much alike. You know, do you see what I'm saying here?
Yeah,
it could be.
Okay. Some searches go pixel by pixel, and some go by the tags on the
right.
Internet. Well, four people are on the phone. Okay, Paul Rapp, very quickly, tell us something you haven't told us before.
I still haven't.
Okay,
had
you've lost your chance. Okay, Polly Law.
That was very good, Alan.
I'm looking forward to a full slate of shows for the coming year.
Okay, and here we go. Let's go to, that's all, folks. We'll go to Kathy in Latham. Kathy in Latham, your turn. Go ahead, kid.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am a business consultant, and I work with owners of small businesses in the selling of their companies. And oftentimes I'm working with, you know, second and third generation business owners, and they oftentimes have logos and names that are not protected intellectually. And I just wanted to kind of get a feeling for recommendations about transferring that property, those assets to a buyer when you have those situations. Yeah.
Well, the fact is that they are protected by common law, even if they're not registered either with the state or the Patent and Trademark Office.
They've been using them for all these years.
Right. For as long as you've been using them, you have common law rights in the geographic area that you're operated in. So it is something of value, and it is an asset of the business, and it should be, you know, mentioned explicitly in the transfer that they're getting the logo and the name as well as all of the other assets of the business.
So it would behoove the buyers at that point, though, to go and get them protected once they have that right? Or
it's probably a good idea, though, if they've been in business for a long time and are sort of geographically contained, you know, they're not on the internet and all that. You've probably got almost as good a protection at the common law as you would by registering. I mean, registering is never a bad idea, but it can sometimes be expensive. And
yeah, but with the internet, with the range of the internet, it would probably behoove them at some point to register them.
Right.
Every year, less and less businesses are geographically contained.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And so registering with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office is always a good idea.
So common law would be sort of like living with an image for many, many years, just like you would maybe with a man or a woman. Or, that'd be common law also, right?
Well, that applies strictly to logos, not to
men and women.
Not to copyrightable images and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we're talking about trademark, which is the protection of commercial designations as opposed to copyright, which is the protection of original works of creativity.
Okay. All right. Kathy, you're done with us?
Well, as a follow-up, so the business gets sold. It's protected under common law. So the buyer now owns that property. Or I guess in the question, if it was copyrighted or trademarked, does the buyer have to go and re-register them, or how does that work?
If it's already registered, you just file a notice of assignment. If it's not registered yet, they're free to register at any time they want.
You know, but Kathy makes a good point, because you guys, I've learned something for you on the show. If an artist paints a picture and then sells the picture to somebody else, right? Have I got this right? The artist still owns the right to the picture.
The copyright.
But that's copyright.
The copyright.
That's different
copyright
from trademark.
Ah.
The trademark is considered part of the goods of the business, and it would be transferred during the sale.
So it would be possible for the copyright and the trademark to belong to different people?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Well, okay, Kathy, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Terrific. Thank you. You guys are great.
Thank you.
All right. And now, 1-800-348-2551. You want to get in, now's the time to do it. 1-800-348-2551. Bob in Po-Town, Poughkeepsie. Bob, you're on.
Hi. Thank you guys for taking my call.
Sure.
Actually, they didn't. I did.
But my first time calling, so I'm a bit nervous here. But I'm a hobbyist musician / composer. It's something that I started earlier in life, and now, you know, in my 40s, I kind of picked this up again. But I wanted to know, you know, I've gotten to a point, I have a number of songs, compositions I wanted to distribute, or I wanted to give it to some people for evaluation and send it off to some places. And I'm wondering, you know, I know that there's a whole, I can go online and copyright some of this material. And I'm just concerned about, you know, if I go to make changes to this material down the road, you know, or, you know, what do I have to go through, first of all, if I do copyright it? And second of all, do I even have to be concerned about copyrighting it if I'm using it for that purpose initially?
I think you should, and you know, go ahead and if you got a bunch of works and you haven't published them yet, you haven't recorded and released them, you can do them all on one application and pay the $45 or $55 filing fee, and then you don't have to worry about it anymore. And if you make changes down the road that are significant, those would be derivative works of the original works that you registered, and if the changes are significant. Then you can just re-register, you know, if you think the song's really got legs.
Okay.
Better be safe.
Better
be safe than sorry.
Yeah.
I keep telling myself I got to get my money out of the stock market.
That's
before
right.
It's too late.
Okay. you know, like some of this, like music, like BMI, for example. If I signed up with them, they have some sort of like a. Service where they evaluate your music. I mean, should I have it copyrighted before I send it
to
some of their clinics?
I think before you put it out there, sure. Sure, I
okay,
would, because
great.
It's inexpensive and it's just mildly frustrating to deal with their online filing system. But, you know, it you tough your way through it and you pay the registration fee and then you don't have to worry about it again.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. So get in with your calls because now's the time. 1-800-348-2551.
Support for WMC comes from Jay's Art Shop, downtown Bennington, Vermont, featuring art supplies, custom picture framing, art gallery, cards, gifts, and fashion apparel, 45 years in business. jaysartshop.com. Merriman and Pfister's Marketplace, Dunmar, an independent artisan gift shop offering pottery, jewelry, glassworks, woodcrafts, paintings, and photography from artists in the community and beyond. MerrimanPfister.com. Mass Match, for over 15 years, a locally owned dating and matchmaking service connecting singles through private matchmaking in Western Massachusetts and beyond. MassMatch.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. And Lori Donovan Designs, Lenox, for over 40 years, offering contemporary and estate jewelry and colored gemstones, specializing in custom handmade jewelry, repurposing, and repairs. LoriDonovan.com.
Back. That's great. No more talking amongst us. We'll go to, it says BET:H.
Huh.
in Lakeville. Okay, you're on now. Okay, you're on, Beth. Beth.
Hi. I have a question. My father wrote a book that was very popular about 50 years ago, and then somebody within the last 10 years decided to make an object of art out of the book and laser cut it into what my father thought was offensive to him. And it's, you know, been put on the internet, and I just wanted to know, about copyright, I guess.
Did they laser cut it into the shape of a gun?
Yeah.
Surprising that I knew that.
How'd you know that?
It's a long, long story.
You know, the person who did that did not alter your father's writing, which is what is actually covered by the copyright, not the physical form of the book.
Yeah, and there's something called the first sale doctrine that, you know, once you buy a copyrighted work, You can do whatever you want with your copy.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, I
except make
about
more
that.
Copies.
Except make more copies.
Well, in this case, are they making
more?
No.
They're taking a book that they bought in a bookstore and laser cutting it into the shape of a gun.
But they're not trying to sell it?
Yeah. Well, they're not selling it as a work of literature. It now becomes a sculpture.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, it's like artwork or something.
The only legal theory I can think of is that, you know, you could say that people are going to associate your father with guns and violence, but that I don't think any court is going to recognize
especially in this country.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
What?
Whoop.
I think we lost Bette. Okay, thank you very much, Bette. Okay, now we'll go to, let's see here, Catherine in Troy. Catherine in Troy, you're on.
Hi there.
Hi.
First of all, I want to say that I have used Paul for a trademark search, and he is tremendously wonderful to work with.
Oh, thank you.
Very reasonably priced, very personable, very warm, very supportive.
Wait a minute. Are we talking about the same Paul?
Is this a paid advertisement?
Checks in the mail, Catherine. Checks in the mail.
Okay.
Thank you.
So here's my question. So Paul did the trademark search. I got my website and my domain name, both from the same place. Mm-hmm. Now, a couple of things have come up, and I've got to close the business. So if I stop paying for the website, I stop paying for the domain name, it goes back out there into the world. Mm-hmm. But I spent a year, you know, putting my little T at the circle at the end of the name of my business, you know, getting it out there in the world that this is my name. I didn't register it because I didn't want to spend that money. So Paul said, you know, put a circle at the end, put a T in it. Right, Paul?
Right.
And then, you know, in time, you know, it's just clearly yours. But if I drop the domain name, stop paying for the domain name, then that becomes available. How does that impact my trying to save my name? Because I don't know that I won't use that name again.
I would continue to pay the money to keep the domain.
Because it's fairly minimal to keep
a domain. It's a very small amount.
You don't have to keep the website up, but you can maintain ownership of the domain if you want to protect that.
Oh, I never thought to do that.
Yeah,
I think I was thinking because I have the website and the domain name at the same place, but I can pay for them separately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but this really does bring up a very important subject, which we've taken very seriously here at WAMC. We had a miscreant who was trying to adopt every one of our names that he could online.
I know who you mean.
Yeah, I bet you do. and what we did was to go out. It cost, and he knew it, I'm sure. It cost us a fortune. Because you know, Shartok does something or other. You know, we had all of them. Those were a lot of money when you added them all up. So it does raise an interesting subject.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when someone is what they call cyber squatting, it's going to cost about $2,000 if they're holding it without any claim of right at all, and they're holding it for ransom. It's still going to cost you at least $2,000 to go through the process to get it back. And the people that are cyber squatting, if they're savvy, will hold out and say, "I'll sell it to you for $2,000."
Sure.
You know, and you might
great
even
gray
save
mail.
Yeah, you might even save a little money by actually paying them off. But yeah, I mean, that's a constant problem.
Yeah, Catherine, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Yeah,
I didn't understand what cyber squatting is. What is cyber squatting?
That's when someone, you know, adopts a name and they have no right to it, and it's actually the name is a trademark for some other business who just, you know, felt. A lot of times you fall asleep at the switch and you forget to renew.
Or even a person's name.
And there's a whole process you can go through if you can show that the person that's, you know, owns the domain has no legal claim whatsoever to own it other than just the mere fact that they own it.
It was much more common when the internet was just ramping up.
The gold rush, yeah.
People would go and stake a claim on like McDonald's.com or AT&T.com before the companies got wind of the fact that the internet might be someplace they wanted to be.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. Now we're going to go to Greg in, no, yeah, okay. Greg in South Deerfield, Massachusetts. Okay, Greg, you're on. Go, Greg.
Hi. I would like to thank you, first of all. I appreciate your addressing these topics. I have a question related to trying to get a project to happen through the government, and I'm wondering if you propose an idea to them that involves merging technologies and money. How can you protect your idea as you proceed? Because I'm not doing it as a government employee saying, oh, here, my boss, here's a great idea, let's do it. I'm saying it as an individual that just wants to do this.
Got it.
Well, I don't think you can protect your idea, per se. What are you sending them?
What am I sending them?
Yeah, physically. I mean, what are you sending them? Are you sending them just a proposal? Are you sending them just your concept?
Well, at this point, I haven't even gotten that far. At this point, I'm just, you know, trying to kind of do my research and make sure that everything I'm proposing is going to work.
Well, you can't protect an idea through copyright. You cannot. So I'm not sure.
So you have to develop the technology yourself first and then sell it or whatever.
It sounds more like a patent, doesn't it? I mean, well, without knowing what it is that you're doing.
Again, that's why I ask, what is he planning to send?
I mean, sometimes if you have an idea and you don't want to develop it, at least in the private sector, you try to get this idea you're disclosing it to write what's called to agree to a non-disclosure agreement, where they say, you know, you're going to give them this process or idea, and if they're going to exploit it, they've got to enter into negotiations with you.
But you can't get the government to do that.
I'm sure the government won't sign it, and, you know, so yeah, I don't know.
Right.
Okay, but that's common in the private sector.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
I'll have to learn more about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Craig. Okay, so it's 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We've got a Bill in Niskayuna. Okay, Bill, you're on.
Yes, I owned a website that published guitar tabs for about 3 years. I found out later that they were derivative acts, and so they were... I was basically doing something that wasn't kosher, although it's very common practice. You know, that's been many years ago, and I'm curious your feelings. There really hasn't been any action. Nobody has ever been pursued, as far as I know, over these guitar tabs. There's certainly a lot of websites out there doing it.
Sure.
What's going on with guitar tabs?
Okay, Paul, can you describe
what is a guitar tab?
Guitar tabs are going to show the chord progressions in songs graphically. Yeah. And chord progressions themselves are not protectable as copyright, as a general matter. I mean, copyright for music covers melody and lyrics and not chord progressions. That's why you hear the same chord progressions over and over in different songs. The graphic display will have some limited protection. The actual two-dimensional work of visual art showing those.
Would it?
It would be limited because it's
a chart.
Yeah, it's like directions. You're right.
Yeah.
It's like a recipe.
Yeah.
And so, you know, unless you had the combination and the colors and
if you hired Edwin Tufte to
whatever fonts, but not much protection. So, you know, that's why you see them all over the place, because it's a pretty weak case to try to shut them down.
And so, where do you see the tabs? Are those the little things that when you buy some music, the little things that show you where to put your fingers?
Where to put your fingers? Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, my band, there's tabs for songs from my band, and I just find that goofy. But there they are. You know, somebody sat down and, you know.
So, Bill, this is a disappointing answer, right?
No, it's very encouraging. In other words, you feel that I could proceed with my website publishing tabs for popular music and not get myself into trouble. Am I reading you correctly on that? Because I was told by a very important attorney in New York City who works with the music industry and works with a big music publisher in New York City that does these tabs as well as traditional sheet music. And he said that there are big penalties and the teeth are there. No one's ever used it, but it's there. And, you know, I'm a family guy. I didn't want to risk my livelihood. my real livelihood. I never made a lot of money with Taz, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And you think I'm okay to
well,
do that?
I do, but if I worked for a big music publisher, I might tell you differently. And Tabs, actually, without the lyrics, is kind of useless. And once you write the lyrics in, then you've got a problem. But the mirror.
Oh, I had the lyrics. I had. In other words, I was spelling the actual song, for iTunes, which of course is licensed, right up on the top bar.
Yeah.
And then the name of the song, and then the lyrics, and the guitar tab over the lyrics.
Yeah.
And then the thing that he said was the most damaging on my website was, there was a testimonial about us, in the About Us section of the website. We have music degrees, the people that work on this, we're making it deadly accurate. And he said, wow, that's definitely, if it's deadly accurate, then it's a derivative act.
I think your biggest problem was putting the lyrics on there.
Yeah.
And the problem is with
well, you can't do it without the lyrics in the
exactly.
name.
But the lyrics are definitely copyrighted material, and by putting those up there, you're putting your face in the fan, basically.
What I love is the idea that you would say, maybe we've never gone after anybody here. Which reminds me a little bit of never take that tab off the mattress where it says violation of law.
Now, could someone use as a defense that this has been going on for X number of years and no one has ever prosecuted it before?
No, because copyright is selective. If you want to protect your copyrights or not. And the fact is, most of the ones you're going to find are going to be registered in Estonia, right? Or someplace where you just can't get to them.
Yeah.
And so that's why you find them online. But, doing it from Poughkeepsie, you're going to be a sitting duck.
You hit the nail on the head, my friend. the biggest guitar tab site in the world is based in Russia.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
You could never get a civil judgment there.
Never.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. All right, so now we're going to go to Douglas. And where is he, Paul?
He's in Poughkeepsie.
Poughkeepsie you were talking about. Po-town, we call it. Okay, you're on, Douglas.
Hello. My question is about the use of web images. I was doing a theater work, and I used this web image, which was a scientific image. It wasn't commercial, of a brain scan from a university, and I just used it as my... part of the image of my flyer, my poster. And in the blurb on the postcard that I had, I credited the university, but otherwise I did not. And I was just curious if I was obligated to credit the university. It was not a commercial, it was not an image used for commercial purposes. It was a scientific image, I guess.
Well, you're saying it was a radiologic image of some sort?
Yeah, scan. Exactly.
Yeah, technically, I suppose the university holds a copyright to that image, but the reality is it's not going to have been registered. It's probably one of hundreds of images in that same study. I'm not the attorney here, Paul is, but yeah. I don't see, based on the use you're talking about, that it would be a great problem.
Yes,
Bill Westwood.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was going to go to the same place you are. So if Bill Westwood, who is the best medical artist in the world, were to have painted that scan.
Different story.
Yeah.
You'd be in court, Buster.
Different story. Different story.
I just want to be, just because it wasn't used for a commercial purpose originally doesn't mean copyright doesn't attach to it. And your use for a commercial purpose is definitely infringing on whatever copyright they...
But...
Yes.
If
the image came originally from a state university...
Well, that's true.
States cannot hold copyrights.
Right.
That's interesting.
Feds can't.
I think it did.
Feds can't. Okay, I thought it was states.
States can... And how about the person whose brain it is? How about him? Doesn't he have any rights?
He's got no rights. It's one of those things like Paul's always talking about. The the odds of somebody coming after you for this are about a trillion to one, in my opinion.
Well, that's why. I mean, I didn't think it would be it was a one-night show. And
I mean, let me just say that this has been what we call anonymized, right? All the patient information is not there. You know, there's way to identify.
It wasn't about the patient at all. It was about the nature of the technology that they used to get this very specific type of image. It was a very graphic showing the electrical circuitry in the brain and that. So it had nothing to do with a patient. Actually, it probably was a healthy brain anyway.
Now you're talking about something that, gives me a little bit of pause here, because if it's something that really was special, somebody might have registered. I mean, it's hard to say without seeing the image. I was thinking you were talking about a straight radiologic image from somebody's brain study.
This is unusual, a very unusual and graphic image. That's why they were talking about it, because it's a new way of imaging a working brain.
Then I retract what I've said.
So let me ask you this, Mr. Westwood. Let me ask you this. You're an artist, and what if a patient, any patient, has a picture taken, something of their groin or something else, and the doctor sends it in to the New England Journal or whatever.
Right.
They have to have your signature on that, don't they?
No,
they don't.
You're talking about the patient's signature.
Yes.
No.
You sign a release.
You sign a release at the time that you you get involved with a doctor in most cases.
With the procedure.
Right. You do?
Yeah.
So every time you walk into a doc's office, I was there this morning, you have to look and see whether you're signing away your rights to your teeth or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, but your teeth aren't copyrightable. Yeah.
Well, they're unique.
Yes, they are unique.
Just make sure your face isn't on there.
Yeah. You know,
except for my face.
I got it. We're gonna take a short break, and we will be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs, in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. Wellspring, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to end relationship and sexual abuse in our community, wellspringcares.org. Mass Match, for over 15 years, a locally owned dating and matchmaking service connecting singles through private matchmaking in Western Massachusetts and beyond, massmatch.com. State Street Fruit Store, Deli, Wines, and Spirits, downtown Northampton, a locally owned, community-minded grocery and specialty food store since 1922. Wine tastings every Friday, 4 to 7. statestreetfruit.com. And the Egremont Barn, a new home for music, food, entertainment, and community in the Berkshires. This week's events and tickets are available online at theegremontbarn.com.
Okay, we're back. Thanks to Mr. Zachary, who's at the board here. Okay, so you want to get us? It's 1-800-348-2551. We've got people on the phones, but I want to read you something that came in over the internet.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
Yeah. Patricia writes to us from Granville. I purchased a CD with images of vintage Santas and was surprised to see a copyright on it. These images are from old postcards. I don't plan to use them in projects that would be sold anywhere. But would there be an infringement if someone did that? Thank you.
Yes.
Not necessarily.
Well, they may be just...
it depends on how they used it. If she took the exact image she was given, and that's been copyrighted.
No, it may be...
It's still going to fall under fair use?
Well, it depends on how old the image is.
They may be just registering the collection.
And the assortment
and not the individual images.
But the collection then would be protected, right?
The collection would. You can't like print up the whole CD.
And resell
it. You can't
it.
Duplicate the right. CD.
But you could take one of those Santas out.
And use it for whatever you want. That's what I think.
If it's like Dover editions or something, that's what they do, is they take old images right. that are out of copyright Absolutely. And package them up and sell the discs.
But you can't take that Dover book or disc
and copy
and reproduce it and sell it.
But they do say that you can take individual images
yes,
and use them for commercial purposes.
Because they're in the public domain.
Right.
So
yeah.
we don't know of these vintage Santas which ones might be in the public domain and which ones
if they're vintage
might, well,
yeah. I mean, if they're originally published before 1923, they're in the public domain. And if they were registered between 23 and 61 or whatever it is, and the copyright registration wasn't renewed, they're in the public domain.
So how are the aggregators, Paul, getting away with taking pictures from the 1950s and putting them in there?
That's
you know,
a
the
really
collage.
Good question.
Yeah. How do they get away with that? Because I see a lot of that.
Aggregators or appropriators?
Appropriators.
Well, you can, right. yeah, again, you, I mean, you can take a picture and incorporate it in an artwork, but then you can't make a lot of copies of your artwork. You know. You,
but places like Getty.
And Getty.
That take images that, you know, multiples may exist of out in the world, but then they try to sell the rights to use images that they don't really have an exclusivity on.
They don't. They really don't. And, you know, Getty is sort of the boogeyman. I mean, they hire attorneys and pay them a percentage of what they bring in to go around the internet and chase people down for using images that Getty claims to own the rights to, the licensing rights to.
And I'll remind all of us who don't know, of course I do, who Getty was again?
John Paul Getty.
Oh, John Paul Getty, of course.
And it's the Getty Museum and all the rest, and they have the world's biggest archive of, you know, to my knowledge, they've never actually sued anybody. They send these like scary letters to people who have a commercial website that they've used an image on, you know, and they demand all kinds of money. I used to tell people just lowball them, offer them 1/10 of what they're asking for, and they usually go away. And lately I've been telling people just ignore them, and they still go away. So that's
as the old saying goes, that's easy for you to say.
Yeah.
So anyway, we have four people on the phone. Let's go get them, okay?
Yep.
Let's see. We'll go to phone number two. All right, phone number two, because you've been waiting the longest, Cindy. Go ahead. Cindy.
Hello.
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 Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I'm a professional photographer, and I recently launched a freelance business. So I'm learning all the ins and outs of this. And I recently did a photo shoot for a client. And after I had done the shoot and turned in the images, they hand over to me a contract that basically is a work for hire contract. So it's after the fact. And I'm just wondering kind of where, if that's legal, I guess, and no. if you can give me any more information.
Dumas versus Playboy versus right. Dumas.
Yeah.
And
you should have your own contract.
Right.
And it's not going to be an effective work for hire contract until you sign it.
That's right.
And so don't sign it.
And so what is work for hire for the rest of us?
It basically says to a creative person that you are merely the hand at the end of the wrist of the corporation.
Work for hire was a provision that was written into the 1978 law that initially, before the law was passed, was meant to only affect employers and employees, meaning that if your employer is paying all your vacation, your salary for your supplies, that whatever work you create for them would be theirs under the work for hire doctrine.
Which you would expect.
Under pressure from the movie industry and the publishing industry and lots of money donated to Congress in 1974-ish, Congress gave in and extended the work-for-hire provisions. And if you are self-employed and in the creative business and you don't understand work-for-hire, you need to understand it. You need to understand what your rights are. And you need to realize that in situations like this, you do not need to sign that work-for-hire agreement.
Especially after the fact.
Under a work-for-hire agreement, the commissioning party that's paying the independent contractor to create an artwork, the commissioning party would own the artwork. Otherwise,
and the rights.
And the rights.
And the copyrights. And you know, in the absence of that, the creator owns the copyrights. So don't sign it. And plus, to be work for hire, you have to be in one of those nine goofy categories, photographs aren't one of them.
Photography does not fall into one of the nine categories.
But they always end up saying it's work contributed to the whole.
But that's weak. That's very weak.
Sure is. But I would suggest.
So now what if they withhold payment until I sign this contract?
Sue them.
Well, right.
I would really suggest that you consider joining ASMP,
right?
Which is the American Society of Media Photographers, right, or Media Professionals,
right?
Okay.
And get yourself educated and get some backup.
And if you have a documented contract that says you're going to get paid such and such, or even emails that show that they agreed to pay you so much for a photo shoot, I think you could just take them to small claims court if it's under whatever, $3,000.
Yeah.
I might need a good lawyer.
Yeah, well, you got one sitting right here. Gotta go. Thank you very much. Okay, that was good. We still have four people on the phone. It keeps multiplying. Let's go to Joan in Essex County. Joan, you're on.
Yeah, I had a question about why it is that when you go to Google Book downloads for downloading antique books that have been off copyright for 100 years, why some of the books you can't download because of some agreement with libraries or public university libraries that you could only look at one page at a time, and you could only download them unless you belong to a consortium of some sort. How do they do that? These books are all off copyright.
It's not a copyright issue. It's purely contractual.
Yeah, I'm not aware that libraries were putting restrictions on public domain books, or that Google would agree to it. But it's been a long time since I've looked at the Google Books case.
It's under archive of .org, or one of those. In some of those collections, you can download all sorts of books, you know, free. And then others, you can just go and look at them one page at a time, which is really hard when you're, you know, slow internet, and you want to read the whole book, or you want to copy the whole book, and you just can't do it.
I just think it's due to some weird agreement that they have with the library.
To let us in to scan your books, you agree to these restrictions, but again, I mean, that's not Google's thing.
How could they get away with that if the books are owned by public libraries and public universities and it's in the public domain?
Yeah, and if the book's in the public domain, you should be able to find it out there somewhere. I'm kind of shocked that you can't.
Yeah, well, some of them are pretty rare, and you know, the only place you can find them, unless they eventually show up somewhere. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry.
That's so interesting.
That's interesting. It's too bad.
Was it, Paul, wasn't there a recent case? Somebody wanted to digitalize every book in the world.
Google Books.
Remember that? Google Books.
Yeah.
And they had to back off, didn't they?
Well, they didn't. I mean, it was agreed that I think the point was they wanted an opt-out on the part of the publishers. If you don't want your book generally available, you have to opt out. And the publishers sued and said, no, we want to, you know,
You got it backwards.
You know, you've got it backwards. We'll opt in if we want these things to be generally available. Otherwise, we agree to, like she said, one page. You know, you do a search for a term and you get the page that term's on. And so that was what that was all about. But Google Books has gone ahead. I mean, it's an incredible resource online.
That's great. Okay, we're going to go now to Bruce, of course, in Poughkeepsie. All right, Bruce, you're on. You're on, Bruce.
Yeah, hey, I really appreciate your insight, and I just wanted to be aware. You did touch base on it a little bit. I'm a blues musician, and I have music copywritten by the Library of Congress. Mm-hmm. Now, they've expired because, you know, it got to the point where I just wasn't even interested in that music anymore. But my question to you is, what about all these local musicians that go out performing all these other people's music? How are they protected to be able to do that? And is it legal for them to be out there doing that?
Sure it is. They're protected. The songwriters of the songs being performed are protected by their membership in ASCAP and BMI and CSAC, which collect royalties from bars and supermarkets. Any place that performs music publicly has WMC has to get licenses. Yeah, radio stations and television stations have to get licenses from ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. And most songwriters belong to one of those three. And they get paid, at least hypothetically, every time one of their songs is performed in public.
And yet, he's right, because people play out all the time and play other people's music and don't put anything in.
I have a question.
The establishments do. The bars do.
I have a question for you. You said earlier that you registered copyrights for your music, but then you let them lapse. Unless you've been dead for 50 years, your copyright should still be intact.
Unless you registered before 1964.
I was told they were only good for 20 years.
No.
When did you register them?
Oh, in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. So it's life. It's your life plus 75 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So you still own copyrights, buddy.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay, we got to go. We got a couple of people on the air. I want to get everybody there.
Okay,
let's go to Quinn in Northampton. I love Northampton. You're on, Quinn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think this is an issue that probably falls more under patent law, but I was in Europe this summer, and a couple different places saw this interesting little thing at the end of a line or at the end of the gift shop, which was essentially a like customer satisfaction survey in the form of a small box with a few buttons, you know, asking how was your experience. Had some buttons ranging from, you know, big smiley face to big frowny face. And, you know, you push the button, presumably the data gets collected and sent to the institution. And I thought it was kind of a cool thing. Now, I am a high school teacher, and I want to create one of these things or recreate one of these things at my high school. If I were to do so, would I be in violation of the law?
I can't see how.
Do patents cross borders?
Well,
I honestly don't know.
Patents don't. I just was
copyrights
reading something.
Do.
I was just reading something last night about the long arm of the law for patents and copyrights. The place I would start is I would still do a patent search to see if there's something else out there.
And Google also has a wonderful patent database that's easier to use than the patent and trademark offices.
Oh, is it really? Oh, I'm not familiar with
it. It sounds like a box with buttons on it is pretty obvious. I would be surprised if that's covered by patent, because patent has to be something that's novel and unique and has never been used before.
And as a device of some sort.
I mean, maybe the specific coding is covered by some kind of protection, but if you're writing your own coding for this kind of a gizmo,
I would develop it, take it to a copyright attorney. I mean, a patent attorney, and get a patent search done.
Okay, gotta go. Thank you. All right, let's go to Doug in Queensbury, where everybody plays by the rules. Go ahead, Doug.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I have a disease illness that that around 2 million people have, and we have to carry devices to help manage this disease. I found a fanny pack in a outdoor store a while ago, probably 15, 20 years ago, that fit all my equipment perfectly. I went to buy it years later, and it was gone. Checked the manufacturer. It did have a manufacturer's tag in it. And I checked their website, and they didn't have this bag either. So I would like to reproduce this bag or something similar. And I talked to someone, an attorney, a while ago. And regarding bags, it's a very difficult item to copyright or patent. Or what would I go about if I'm going to remake this bag or something similar and try and market it? What would be the first step?
Well,
and do I have a shot at it?
Yeah, if it's patented, it's probably noted as such on the packaging somewhere that you have. And yeah, I know from painful experience, you really can't get a trademark for the design of a bag, because every portion of the bag is functional. And I've you know, at Second Circuit Court of Appeals, I learned that on the losing end of a lawsuit. So I would go ahead and develop the thing. You know, why not?
Okay, yeah, I didn't see any patent or name on the bag itself, just the manufacturer's
then
name.
Then it'll just become, you know, you get there first with the most and market the heck out of
it.
Just take it to someone who can take it apart and cut a new pattern from it and go to town.
And don't
that's what we did.
Don't call
that's
it the iBag.
We made a prototype.
thanks, Doug. Okay, now from Facebook we got from Linda. As a painter, I use images on the web as a resource. This is a half a minute call. If I don't radically transform the image in the painting I create, is there a danger of copyright infringement?
Yes.
But, you know, what's a dramatic, you know, if you use things as reference, sure, that's good. But if you take one copy or one image and slavishly reproduce it as a painting, then you're going to get in trouble.
Okay. We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. Apologize to no one because no one was left on the line. And thanks to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for joining us today. Here we go. Support for Vox Pop comes from Hawkins House, Bennington, Vermont, a crafts market featuring Ed Levin and other handcrafted jewelry, pottery, blown glass, woodenware, clothing, handbags, accessories, Vermont products, and more. HawkinsHouse.net, the Department of Theater Arts, SUNY New Paltz, A Midsummer's Night Dreams, Shakespeare's Comedy, retold for today. November 9th through 19th, newpaltz.edu/theater. Schenectady County Historical Society in the Historic Stockade and at Mabee Farm Historic Site, presenting fall basket weaving workshops, festival of trees, exhibitions, and more, SchenectadyHistorical.org. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorns Market Place, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and no moo, dairy free. Handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more, Harold's.com. Thanks again for joining us. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to the wonderful Susie Checkeye for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.